KPCA LP, we are live, and we are here in Petaluma, and this is Inside Petaluma, that's right. We're going to talk about some stuff all about Petaluma today. We have a guest coming in who is our former mayor. He's going to be with us in a moment. Cindy Thomas can't be with us today, unfortunately, but we're going to make do. I'm going to operate the board for only the second time ever, so if we have any technical difficulties, that's the reason. Let's start off the show a little banter with Janice. What do you have to talk
well,
about?
Well, good morning. Welcome to Inside Petaluma. Whoa.
Oh, did I do you turn yours? I'm trying to find where mine is. I didn't mean to do that.
No problem. Mayor Glass, we're all okay.
Okay.
It's Friday, and it's a beautiful day. I just want to talk about the 4th of July. Hope everybody had a fun, safe 4th of July. And I just want to talk about animals because this was our dog Coco's first year with the 4th of July. She laid on the bed, fell asleep. When she'd hear the fireworks, she lifted her head up and kind of looked around, and then she'd lay her head back down and go to sleep. Mm. And then after a while, she started growling at the fireworks. And then she started barking, wanting to go outside. Around 2 in the morning, I opened the door and let her out, and she went chasing, you know, finding where those things were in our backyard protecting. We feel very lucky we have a dog that is not affected by fireworks.
Well, I'll tell you what. That was the number one complaint that I got as mayor for, you know, 12 go-arounds. Yeah. The night of the fireworks and afterward, what's wrong with you, you idiot, for allowing this to happen in our city? And there's lots of reasons why it's idiotic, not the city fireworks show that they put on, but the use of personal, what they want to market as sane fireworks, it's absolutely, even if they're legal, doesn't mean it's sane.
Exactly.
So to shoot those things off and do that to the animals in the area, but also to take the additional risk of a fire breaking out somewhere. And I don't know about you, but I live up on a hill and was able to see from our house, and I watched the city provided fireworks, but I was able to see a number, a wide range and a continual number of what had to be illegal fireworks protruding high into the air on a regular basis. And with the fires that we've had, I just don't know what people are thinking.
Well, yesterday I was driving in from Eastman Lane, so I was on Bodega, and all of a sudden I saw all this smoke, and I thought there was a fire. So I went down to where I saw the smoke, and it was a family doing fireworks in the rural area. It seemed safe because it was in a parking lot, and there was asphalt. But it was still in the rural area, and you only had a fence to cross, and then you could have started a fire. So I don't know how to make people understand
you won't.
That this is not safe.
And somehow the message gets mixed into patriotism, which really, I don't know how you support, for instance, first responders and stretching the resources of the fire department and then ignore good prudence on what you pay money to light up and burn and shoot up in smoke.
It was also a first responder that was actually promoting fireworks bill. When he got on the council, he opposed it, but then when he got on the council, he actually supported it. So what I'm really looking forward to is that this new council is going to take this on. They're going to take it on within a few months to go ahead and deal with banning fireworks in Petaluma altogether.
Well, as you know, I took the brunt of
yes,
the
you
heat.
Did. Yes, you did.
That particular issue.
Yes, you did.
But I just look at it. I know it's on the goal-setting session, and I've talked to people, and they had a very popular process, and I think they got a good product out of what they're set up as goals, and kudos to Peggy Flynn, the new city manager.
Yes, absolutely.
And from what I can tell, she has worked and built bridges where before resistance existed. Mm-hmm. And I hope that she is successful in continuing to do that. It's a major reason why she stood out amongst all of the candidates there when we were screening candidates for city manager. And if she can continue to build the bridges, and it'll be interesting to see the challenge that she gets on this, because building that bridge between the nonprofits that raise the money by the sale of fireworks and the voters to wind up pulling off eliminating the sale of fireworks in the community. I think it would be a better service for the nonprofits if they're going to suffer a revenue loss, that out of the transient occupancy tax, just appropriate the funds on an annual basis that historically they have achieved and give it a declining revenue maybe so they can transition. But I'd rather see them give the money away than continue this nonsense.
And I think we really need to look at the nonprofits before deciding to give public funds to just any nonprofit.
It's not across the board.
It's a complicated issue.
But it is. But yeah. I'm just saying that if money is the reason that this is happening, I would take away that reason and achieve something better for the community.
The bottom line is they start fires. We're in climate change. And we don't want any more fires. So it really, to me, there's not a big discussion here. The discussion is really they need to figure out how they want to move forward.
Yep.
I just want to remind the listeners, you're listening to Inside Petaluma on KPCALP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. We have myself, Jason Davies, and Janice Cater Thompson. Cindy Thomas is normally with us. She couldn't be here today. And we are joined by our distinguished former mayor, Mayor David Glass. Actually, if it's mayor, is it kind of like president? You're always mayor?
Yeah, absolutely. Once a mayor, always a mayor.
Okay, so I don't have to say former.
Is that the same with city council?
No.
Well, you could say, I want to be clear, it's mayor retired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because clearly, Teresa Barra is the mayor. There's one mayor at a time, just like there's one president at a time.
Right.
I can speak this way. I've been former mayor twice because... Unlike, you know, Grover Cleveland, I didn't run for re-election that one time. See, so I ran, I left the office, so I was former mayor.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear nice things about yourself, you just tell the community that you're not running for re-election. And then if you want to find out what the opposition really thinks about you, just tell them you're coming back. Because I've been there on both sides of that issue. I don't think I'm coming back this time. I think that I had my time there and that's it.
So let's remind the listeners, how many terms did you serve?
3 terms as mayor and a partial term as a city council member.
How does it feel to not be mayor anymore?
It's great. You know, I did what I could do while I was there.
Yeah.
And I told people, and I told Matt Brown when he did an exit interview, and I thank him for the exit interview. I said, look, I left it all on the field. Yeah. I said, what I did, for better or worse, people can judge it, but I wasn't shy about advocating for positions. And I'm satisfied with that. I'm not going to be out there pounding that they should do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Today is a pinch-hitting role, and it's natural to talk about the use of fireworks because
sure.
it's the 5th of July.
Yeah.
And I do think they should sunset that, and it's on the goal setting. And I think that the makeup of this current city council has the courage to go forward
yeah.
and do it. And I hope so.
Well, that's Dave King kind of responded that he was supportive of
yeah.
it. He was going to wait a year, and so it seems as though we actually have 4 votes to maybe make this happen with him as being a swing vote, I'm hoping.
Well, what happens, too, is that if you get 4, a lot of times you get 7. I know that
right.
was the case with the Dutra Asphalt Plant situation.
Yeah.
The council suddenly became unanimously against that project, but it didn't happen until Tiffany and Renee and myself joined the council to get it to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then people that had been there
right.
and were of no help getting a logical resistance to the asphalt plant suddenly pivoted and got out of the way because, you know, for a politician, it's no fun to be at the vineyard if you're the grape and you get squished. So all of a sudden, they turn out to
well,
be, you know,
speaking
unanimous.
Of Dutra, it's raising its ugly head. They're going to the Army Corps of Engineers
yeah.
to get approval. And so they have raised their ugly head again, and this is not great for the community. They've got...
And it's a different environment because yeah. the Clean Water Act is in the process of being dismantled
well,
by the federal
problem.
Government.
That's right.
So I don't know how that plays out. I'm talking about the politics now.
Well, no, but I'm just
yeah.
raising what is...
Yeah, you're right.
Dutra, and
you're
the
right.
community needs to be aware of this. They need to start getting on the Dutra site. Actually, the Friends of Schollenberger
yeah.
site.
Yeah, Save Schollenberger.
SaveSchollenberger.com. And, you know, start getting engaged in and watching what's happening because it's really interesting. By the airport, I was driving by the airport, and there's this big pile of dirt, and they're grinding up, you know, all this old roadway and old rubble. And so are they actually making asphalt in those areas? I'm not really sure what they're doing because they...
Well, it's aggregate, right?
Well, it's aggregate, yeah. so where is the aggregate going, or are they actually making it on site? And so... there's some questions that I have that I probably will be emailing the city manager asking.
Maybe you can, you know, they've made a lot of progress with how they do things. Maybe now they're able to recycle what used to wind up in the landfill and just recompose.
Well, no, that is what they're doing, because you can see up and down 101 that they have these grinding stations. Oh. But I'm not sure if they're actually making asphalt there. Or so that's something to be interested in. But I do want to bring up something else.
Yeah.
Since we were talking about the goal setting earlier, I missed that meeting because it was Coco's first dog training. So that kind of came first. But on Monday, Cindy Thomas and I were driving around town because we do what we call our transportation tour. And so we were going around videoing the community. And what we saw is on Lakeville, I stopped for a pedestrian. The pedestrian started going by. I put my arm out to make sure the white truck next to me stopped for the pedestrian. And then there was a dark pickup truck that went on the side of the white pickup truck. So now we're in three lanes on Lakeville. And then once the person got past these three vehicles and made it safe to the other side, this black truck just beelined and cut right in front of the white pickup truck.
Hmm.
And we think we have this on video. And we're going to go back and look to see exactly where this was, because the next day a teen was hit by a car. And I just happened to be driving on Lakeville, and I saw the car. The windshield was just shattered. The boy was laying on the street, very injured, and he's now in the hospital. And my point of this, when we're talking about goal setting, is we need to start looking at safety measures in this community. We're growing like mad. The truck traffic, the car traffic, everything has increased, and the city is not using mitigation funds for projects to put in lit crosswalks. I put this right on the city for not being forward, and I want to go into the D Street, from the D Street Bridge to Lakeville. That area could have all been widened. Those telephone poles need to be underground to make it safer for people to walk. But also, when the Riverfront project was approved, it was my understanding that Basin Street did not want bike paths within their project, so the bike paths are on the perimeter, and Lakeville ended up being a focal point for also bicyclists because of one developer making a safety issue non-existent. And so maybe you can fill us in on that, Mayor Glass.
I can't comment to that because I can't recall all of the information with that. But what I can comment about the traffic analysis, because this just sticks in my brain so vividly, the day that that project came before the city council, and you're reviewing the environmental impact report to determine whether the analysis is adequate or not. And I think you're allowed, even though you're not an expert, to take empirical observations as long as you describe them accurately and say, this is what I see. And based on that, perhaps the analysis is inadequate and should be further investigated. So at that meeting, I had asked the traffic consultant about a situation, and people will recognize this because we've all experienced it. So I think people will say, yes, that's a situation I don't experience every time, but have experienced at least occasionally. If you are headed on D Street and you're going from Petaluma Boulevard in that direction toward Lakeville, and I was the day that came before the city council, and I was the second car in line waiting to get through that intersection, and there was total gridlock, so I waited through two complete cycles of the light before, as the second car in line, I could get through the intersection. And I asked a consultant about that, and I said, how could it be that this is not showing a level service F, a failed system, in the traffic analysis if you sit and wait through total gridlock? And the answer that I got was, if you had waited through total gridlock and there were no cars coming through the intersection, the research wouldn't show that there was gridlock. Instead, it would show no cars coming through the intersection, and it will read that as there must not be any cars to come through the intersection, and that traffic is absolutely fine.
That seems flawed.
So I didn't vote for it. Teresa Barrett didn't vote for it. Dave King was not yet on the city council, and I believe it passed with a vote of 5-2 as an adequate traffic analysis.
Wow.
And so we continue to experience that gridlock situation, at least on occasion, and I think it's a more regular occurrence now than it was back in maybe 2014 when that was certified.
Since 2014 to now, traffic has changed 100%.
Yeah, and so it's
in the entire community, east and west side. And all, in my opinion, what it really took was it made it that you had to look into the future. You have to look 20 years out. And with all the rail crossings, it just working with SMART, I don't want to hear the debate about SMART versus the cities, but the problem was maybe if the cities would have all widened those crossings that we would actually have adequate crossings today. Now we have crossings from the 1930s with very little change. And I want to go into an article that was in the Press Democrat, I think it was on June 12th, and it was about the Hearn Avenue in Santa Rosa. Hmm. And I knew this was coming up. But in 2014, I know the wheels started working to get Sonoma County Transportation Authority and using Measure M money and working with Santa Rosa to widen Hearn Avenue, which is a full interchange crosstown connector, very dangerous, just almost a mirror image of Corona without the on and off ramps. And now if we go down to the rail crossing at Corona, it's inadequate. How many homes in Brody Ranch? About 300, that we're going to have another 200, almost 200 homes at the rail station on the corner of Corona. No upgrade to that intersection, to that rail crossing, or to that overcrossing. And what's interesting is the real issue is that the city has got to start shifting, because we can get state funds, I believe, because Corona is a regional road and because of all the fires. This is what Santa Rosa is looking at. They're looking at completing their Highway 12 overcrossing and Hearn using safety, getting in and out in case of fire or earthquakes, and that is a mirror image of Petaluma, and it's not 1961 anymore. We need to have 2020 thinking.
It's interesting. John Wooden, the legendary basketball coach, he once said, if you don't have time to do it right the first time, when will you have time to do it over? And so you can see the things that have been done, because this is an old historic city, and with traffic patterns the way they are now, and they've shifted dramatically in the last, 50 years, you look at it, and the resistance that we took to improve the dangerous condition at Old Redwood Highway, unfortunately, we got that done. What Janice is talking about Corona, not quite as dangerous, but in a similar category.
Actually, it is becoming more dangerous.
It is. It's in the process of it.
Because there is no pedestrian or bicyclist can get over there safely, and
true,
the traffic pattern is 100% different than it was even
true
in 2014. So
what peaked
there
out
is
the,
no difference.
Well, what peaked out the danger in Old Redwood Highway was you had that right lane that would put you onto the freeway.
As was Washington Street.
And people did, well,
the,
and
that's
this
the exact same
funnel
thing.
You right there, and all of a sudden people would get to that point where they
right
would wind up knifing in front of traffic because they didn't want to go 4 miles south.
That's right.
So it was more like a game of chutes and ladders than it was a traffic circulation pattern, and people weren't about to take that chute and send them 4 miles south. But
imagine Washington Street without that northbound on.
Oh, God. So at least we got a couple of things done, a couple of major things.
Yes.
One thing that got lost in the political football is people refer to the road diet, and many people have been on Petaluma Boulevard, so they'll recognize what I'm talking about.
Yep.
That was not a traffic solution situation.
Safety,
that was
maybe.
Exactly, and it qualified for fundings because of something called a SAFER grant.
Yeah.
You were going to be safer if you achieved this.
Yeah.
The byproduct of not doing it meant that you were excluded from federal funding to fix the streets. You had a situation that wasn't wide enough for the lanes to accommodate the type of cars that are today because that street was designed years ago, and then they tried to maximize traffic flow by squeezing in two substandard width lanes.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have the vehicles completely changed.
With parking.
Yes.
Yeah, people losing their side mirrors.
Well, not only losing their side mirrors, people losing their life or coming close to losing their life, trying the exact situation Janice was describing on Lakeville of people trying to cross the street and vehicles changing lanes to try to whip around someone that come to a stop for a pedestrian, but that vehicle didn't know it was a pedestrian. They didn't understand why people were stopping. They just moved to the right and were speeding.
People
need to back up and look and see the why of all these things.
Well, and the other thing that people need to understand with the road diet, let's just talk about Petaluma Boulevard from D Street south. If you drive down there, you see these big trucks parked on the sidewalk. Well, that's an American Disability Act problem now.
Uh-huh.
And because you can't get the public walking, people with disabilities, are blocked by these vehicles. Parents can't push strollers. And yet we have the Quarry Heights, you know, and we're trying to encourage mobility through walking, bikes, and yet we're not safe.
You know, what's interesting is so often you hear from development community, all we want to know is what the rules are so we can play by them. And let me just kind of expose that.
Yeah. then it doesn't pencil out and then the rules change.
Yes. They come in and we adopt the Central Petaluma specific plan, and it clearly set out what the vision was and the rules of, for instance, that stretch of road we're talking about. So it was settled back in 2003 when the Central Petaluma specific plan was put into place, that you would have this road diet that would go all the way down to the quarry. And now here comes, after the developers get their development, then they want to change the rules because they don't like the road diet, or the council members that are elected backed by the developers suddenly do a bait and switch, or it becomes politically palatable for a political party, if they're more like a windsock, to realize, wait a minute, maybe the voters, if I manipulate this right, will not want this thing that we will brand a road diet, instead of telling people, look, by doing this, we qualify for federal funds to fix the street with the potholes. By doing this, we achieve a safer condition. Fake news?
Yeah.
And then there are publications that continue to perpetuate, just around the corner is this magic bullet for traffic relief called Rainier. It's just around the corner.
Well, you know what's really interesting is this article on June 12th. Here we're talking about climate change in Sonoma County. We're talking about worldwide climate change, and that is the number one issue. Well, it was in the 1970s when you went over the Corona overcrossing, you actually hit the Willow Brook Bridge, and it went right next to the Willow Brook Bar. So it teed right into Petaluma Boulevard. And then in the 70s, they made this meandering curve, which they, in retrospect, they should have just bought out Vaughn's, haircut on the corner, Vaughn and whatever his name is, and they could have made it straighter, they could have made it safer. But what we really have is a bridge that they built over the Petaluma River Bridge that will not withhold climate change. It already floods. And this is why it's so important that you really look at this as a climate change. You need to look into the future. And if we need safe access routes out of this city, like we did with the fires. When the fires were here, I happened to be driving all around the county, dropping off dog food, clothing. So I was using these roadways to get around the community. It is a safety issue. But with climate change, the city can't just say, hey, climate change is our number one issue. They need to really look at it and understand.
Well, there's also seismic safety, right?
Well, the seismic is with actually the bridge going over the freeway. But the bridge over the river, who knows? Yeah. But no, you're correct. Because
they just had an earthquake.
6.4.
That's exactly right. Safety is important.
It was 90 degrees yesterday in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, highest temperature
Are
ever.
Are you kidding me?
90 degrees.
Well, since, was it 1923 or something? It had been that before, but it's been a long time.
Well, it is, climate change is real. And people need to look at it in the bigger picture. And then we have, the orange, whatever we want to call them in the White House, that just doesn't believe in anything. And let's just talk about the caging of children and the caging of people in our country. We don't have to get into it, but I mean, it is horrible knowing that in this country that we did this to the Japanese. Yep. They knew what was happening in World War II, and our Congress and Senate sent people back and would not allow people to come into this country to protect them. 6 million people were murdered. Another 20 million of Russians were killed. And then we're doing the exact same thing. I'm reading the book about the Habsburgs, for how World War I started, Habsburgs, and how World War I started. And I'm reading this book, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is the madman that we have in the White House. They are so mirror images of what Hitler did and what he is doing to children and just people of color. They're finding a scapegoat. And my mother is not alive anymore, and I'm grateful that she's not, so she doesn't have to see this, and at the same time, I really want to have these conversations.
What I'm wondering is, if we rolled back the clock 10, 20 years, whatever it was, and we saw the pictures that we've seen with deaths that have occurred in what you would have
dark
to say are inhumane
everywhere.
Conditions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Would there be a movement for the United States to go in and have a mission to change that dynamic, if not regime change? Would there be? And our regime change is simple. I'm not advocating anything other than the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, how is this okay? How do people look at this and just digest it as a new normal?
Well, regime change is basically, if the United States wants to do regime change, it's a financial decision. Who's going to be making money? And that's what we're
I hope it is. I'm wondering
that's what
about
it seems
the,
to
I'm
be.
Wondering about money, because at the end of the day, when you can take an American citizen that gets dismembered,
that's
inside
right.
of an
that's
embassy.
Right. That's right.
And
yeah.
the answer that comes back is we do $400 billion
yeah.
a year of trade with
right.
Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
and if we don't do it, somebody else will.
So what's
really,
the,
is that a business decision?
Well, that's why that's a business decision to decide on a war.
So you walk in as a person and you leave the embassy in a suitcase.
That's right.
I mean, think
right.
about what happened.
Are
there.
We really that surprised, though? And has this never happened?
No, we're not surprised at all, but we're starting. This is an example that we probably haven't had other examples of.
I'm just wondering, are we that callous as a society that we accept that as the normal?
Well, I can tell you, I have two cousins that are Trump supporters, and yet we have the same grandparents. And, you know, and they just say, well, our grandparents came here legally. And I'm thinking, yeah, but they were trying to get their family over here so they could come here, and they were all in the concentration camps or shot in the head.
Well, let's think about this for a minute. I mean, Trump says he wants to make America great again. So what part is he trying to make great? He wants to take us back to what we did to the Native Americans or what we did to women's rights and do
and
away
still
with
doing.
Progress. So the thing is, it's like when we celebrate 4th of July, it's very complicated for me because what part are we celebrating? Are we celebrating the promise of what we can be? Are we acknowledging the pain we've brought? It's an interesting dichotomy. We like to light off fireworks and, you know, wave flags and have a lot of fun on 4th of July. And a lot of people don't really think about the depth. But what are we as a country if we allow journalists to be murdered, if we reward them with weapons deals, if our bombs are used in unjust wars? Is that an America we're celebrating?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, David, you would do Memorial Day every year. And this was the first year I missed in a long time because I was out of town. Every year it became smaller and smaller. It was the same people that were coming. And yet, you know, this is a day that we should be celebrating people that, whether you agree or disagree with a war, they fought for what they believed was right. They went into the service. They didn't dodge the service. They are heroes, in my opinion. And yet, the crowds keep getting smaller and smaller. But yet, for a parade, the crowds get bigger and bigger.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, and I watched the speech that President Trump gave yesterday. It's hard for me to use those two words. So I watched that, and I'm thinking, how do people buy this? Because where is the form of credibility? Let's get to the bottom of the bone spur story.
Yeah.
Let's just level with people. How is it that you wind up, once swift voting worked on John Kerry,
yeah,
who
right,
was a war
exactly,
hero.
That's right.
That was unfortunate.
That's
and did
right.
you see where Libya now is fighting Russian interference in their elections?
Mm.
Libya is fighting interference in their elections. The CIA and the FBI come out and say unquestionably that the Russians, and you got to think it's Putin, manipulated the social media with the goal of achieving disruption in the American political process, and in my opinion, succeeded beyond their wildest
right.
expectations.
Yeah. That's right.
Because they won the election.
I want to make it very clear. I worked very hard with the Hillary campaign in our local headquarters. When we had, you know, phone, it was more phone banking than texting at the time, and we knew something wasn't right because we were getting the same people on the phone. They were these angry men, and we kept getting one specific person. So these lists were already tainted, and the younger people that were working on the campaign, they weren't as concerned, but as older, you know, folks working on this, we realized something wasn't right, but we never thought he'd be president.
Well, I mean, if you can do, and people that know how to use social media, and I'm certainly a novice at that.
Yes, you are.
But, yeah, you get down to the people that know it. Now you're starting to understand that districts were targeted with fake messages mm-hmm. to achieve a reaction from a voter pool to assist the election of Donald Trump. And the CIA and the FBI have made it clear that that's what happened.
Is it that much different than our local newspapers?
I'm not going to get into our local newspapers, but...
No, but it's the same thing, David. It's the same thing, just at a local level, manipulating what people say, making decisions to manipulate elections, and now look at the traffic we have. So thank you for manipulating the elections all these years.
That was an interesting round.
Well, but it's true. It is true.
Let's take it back to
Parliament. I'll stay there. You can keep your lips closed, David.
So, what else is going on in Petaluma right now?
What do
you want to talk about?
I just want to talk about it was the flooding, heavy rains shrinks Mother's Beach, and this was in the Press Democrat Day today, front page of the article, and it was kind of an interesting article. I'm not really sure why it's on the front page, but anytime you have a storm or you have a winter event, water goes down the river and beaches change, and that's what this is discussing about how the beaches are changing. Sometimes they're wider, sometimes they're not as wide, sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not there. I think that's called Mother Nature, and I'm not sure why it ended up on the front page of the paper on the Press Democrat today.
What beaches changed? They had a hurricane down in Puerto Vallarta, mm-hmm. and one of the favorite beaches that I've ever been on in my life, and it changed, but slowly over the last couple of years, and we'll go down there again this year and we'll see. The currents are replacing the sandbar that was wiped out. The pelicans are coming back to feed in the area because it was spectacular. You would see hundreds of pelicans just, and they're the most majestic birds with dead aim. I don't know how they do it. Yeah. They're way up high in the air flying along maybe 50 miles an hour, and they go on a diving mission and, spear their dinner. It's amazing to watch. And so I'm hoping that everything will get restored back to the way it was. I love walking that beach. You could just go for a couple of miles and watch.
Well,
it's incredible.
Yesterday I was laying by a pool over on Eastman Lane, and I'm looking up in the sky, and I counted. They were really big birds because they were way up there, and they were six pelicans.
Ooh.
And they were whirling around, coming down lower and lower and lower. And I'm emailing my cousin going, oh, my God, there's six pelicans there. And then all of a sudden, I think they were probably looking for water. And, it was either me, laying by the pool they decided they didn't like, or they realized it was a swimming pool, or it's none of the above. But all of a sudden, they were gone. But they were circling, coming all the way down that you could really see what they were. But
over
they were
the
way up there.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Well, they were looking for the, Schollenberger, the wastewater, river, slough, whatever we want to call it. Yeah.
Tidal slough.
Yeah, but that's interesting you brought those up because of yesterday.
Well, there's an article about Helen Putnam adding another parking lot. And this is related to, there's a Davidon housing development that's planned, and there's been some negotiation with a group that was previously part of the opposition to the project. They've now somehow compromised a deal.
So years ago, when the Barnhagen, it was called, which is West Haven, when that project was put in, there was $50,000 set aside, if I remember the number right. And I want to say the year was 2003. Maybe it was 2004. So that money has been there all this time for a trail that now is going in between Western and Cambridge on off of Windsor.
Yeah.
One of the streets.
Yeah. So that's going in. I haven't been able to talk about that for the longest period of time because I was within the 500 feet.
That's why I want to know your thoughts.
Well, what I don't know is whether there's a one-year restriction before you really can say much. But what I will say about it right now, if the county charges money to park in those parking lots, it'll be a useless expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
And, I made that opinion clear whenever I was asked because there is a county parking lot on the other side off Chelino Valley Road that is virtually empty. It would be interesting to know how much time is wasted going to collect the money that doesn't exist from the parking that doesn't occur at that parking lot, because the parking does take place on Oxford Court. Talking about social media, in front of my house is a red curb, and on next door, which is, that forum is just full of misinformation. You know, like Mark Twain said, it's not what you know that'll get you in trouble. It's what you don't know that ain't so. So somebody on next door ripped me up about I had the curb painted in front of my parked house.
That's right.
I remember that.
Okay? Well, here's the truth, because I never responded to that. I was just like, really? Okay, so there is a fire hydrant in front of our house.
Yes, people were ignoring it.
Yeah, and they would park at the fire hydrant. Yeah. And so in order to make sure, once the fires became a really prevalent issue, in order to make sure that the fire hydrant was accessible, the city put the red paint in front of our house. Now, they didn't go so far as to prevent a car from blocking our driveway.
Right.
So there was just enough room to where someone could block our driveway and park, which is illegal parking. And so we called the city, and they said, well, you could go ahead and paint the rest of that all the way to the, your driveway so that people don't block your driveway. Mm-hmm. And we would, you know, prefer that you do it rather than us send manpower out to do it, but you're authorized to do it. So that's the story on that.
So you saved the taxpayers money.
Yeah, well.
You painted it yourself.
We got what made sense. We got the protection for the fire hydrant so that people wouldn't park there. So for those of you on next door, if you're listening to this, next time you're up there, take a look and notice that there is a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you a fire hydrant story. I got a great one here, David.
I don't even expect an apology from the person that printed that. But just take a look and observe that there is a fire hydrant.
You can't fix stupid
somebody. I'm not calling anybody stupid now.
I'm just saying, take a look at the fire hydrant. So in my neighborhood, we have fire hydrants. And this, there was a bus that was blocking the fire hydrant. I mean, completely blocking the fire hydrant. So I was talking to a dispatcher, and they said, oh, no. It's legal to park in front of fire hydrants because if there's a fire, the fire truck comes and just pushes the vehicle out of the way using the fire truck. And I'm thinking, so you're going to damage the fire truck? Because,
no.
I mean, I'm thinking, no.
I never heard that it was legal to park in front of
Well, okay, well,
hydrant.
I had never heard it either, but I am telling you, this is, well, that's why.
That's bizarre.
Well, but this is what happens in a city. Like this.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and
well,
so.
That's their story, and they're sticking to it.
I
believe you'll flunk your test at the DMV if you say it's legal to park in front of a fire hydrant.
Well, I mean, this is a dispatcher telling me that. That's
you know,
problem.
My wife just came back from taking the DMV test.
Yeah.
How'd she
and,
do?
Well, she got 19 out of 20. She
that's
said she
good.
Missed the last question. Yeah. And so she
was
got
about,
her license.
Was about parking in front of a fire hydrant?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
I think it was parking about it in front of a parking in a driveway, blocking somebody's driveway. And she, I think, listed that you can do it and you can't.
So your but, house is on Oxford, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to be looking out to 28 homes potentially. What are your thoughts on that?
My property value is going up.
Well, I don't mind it. I personally, I think 28 homes, okay, so they got it mitigated down to probably the logical, reasonable level.
Yeah.
And that seems to me to be a good solution for that. So it doesn't, and where our house is situated on a personal basis, it will have no impact.
Yeah.
I can't imagine any impact that that has. The interesting part of it,
well, people
that will be a challenge. Will be how do you make a left-hand turn on Windsor onto D Street?
Yeah.
They're going to have evidently from people telling me, but I haven't read this because I was barred from participating in this, but there'll be a traffic circle proposed at D Street and Windsor. And I'm going to be interested to see if anybody can get in that merry-go-round because there are times where the traffic coming down D Street would completely clog a traffic circle. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
But what about the impacts in terms of runoff from the development? A lot of people expect.
You know, Jason, you're a lot smarter than I am about that. And I have not read the reports because I wasn't allowed to be involved in it. And so I haven't read all of that information. And I'm not even sure at this stage. I don't know whether you have to wait a year before you can go down there and be an advocate at City Hall. So my feeling on it, when I said in the newspaper, when I left office, I said, you know what? I left it all out there on the playing field, everything that I could participate in. I don't think I stuttered when I talked, and I think I was pretty clear about where I was coming from. I left it all there on the field, and I don't really, at this point, what the council decides to do is what they'll decide to do. And politically speaking, if I were to go down there and tell them this is what you need to do or have to do, I think it would be not beneficial.
Well, David, you don't have to go down there and tell them what they have to do. You can just give your opinion.
But see, I don't have an opinion because it's not informed.
Well, no,
I haven't read the material.
I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about any issue.
Okay.
Everybody has a right to go down and speak in front of their city
they
council.
They do. That's true.
Even if you were on one side of the dais, you do not give your right away as a citizen.
That's my point. That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's an EIR process that's going to happen, so it's not like this thing is completely approved. But I know that there were some council members that were opposed to any new buildings in that area based on runoff issues, based on traffic concerns, based on the cost and the model of the way infrastructure is provided out of the city core. It's just kind of an older, sprawling kind of approach to development. And they're not affordable houses either.
No. If you go back into the old general plan, not the one that's current now, it talked about deliberate feathering of densities as you approach the urban limit line. Yeah. To me, the 28 achieves that vision. I don't know what the right number is because I haven't read the reports, but it started out like something like 93, then it went to 66, then it went to, was it 49, and they wind up at 28. I don't know that zero is the right number because taxes have been paid on the parcel, and zero is a tough number to say that you haven't had a taking of property right. I know.
The problem I have with it, frankly, is it, on one level, it's just so sad because the person who had that property donated it to the UC system to keep it preserved.
University of Pacific.
That's not
UC.
Yeah, not UC.
Okay. No, University of Pacific.
That's private college.
The University of Pacific. Yeah. Okay.
UOP.
Well, he made a mistake because it's not being preserved.
Did he donate it with a goal of it being preserved?
That's
he could have donated it to Putnam Park and it would have been preserved.
Well, he made a mistake.
Okay.
You know, when you donate to a university, they have a lot of leeway. They're not going to sign something that ties them in because this is money-making for them, and this is what a university
will do. Well, if you were to follow this to its logical conclusion, there's nothing to stop the open space district other than the category of saying it has to be a willing seller approaching the open space district. But I wonder what would happen if the University of Pacific were to approach David Rabbit in the open space district and say, we could be a willing seller. Because that would be a spectacular addition to Putnam Park.
Let's play the devil's advocate on this just for the fun of it. You know, we're talking climate change. Sure. And what's the city of Petaluma doing? There's been 40 acres of the old Pomeroy site that was just bought. There's the riverfront project, which is, moving full steam ahead without proper access inside of or out of that project. When you're really looking at developing, wouldn't it be better to develop up on the hills instead of in the core of the city that's going to eventually flood with climate change? You go to Europe and there's a lot of development on the hills, and then all of a sudden the basin is preserved for farming.
And hard part is, Janice, is that you're also trying to do transit-oriented development.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I agree with that. I get
that.
But all I'm saying is that in other countries, people did not necessarily they preserved areas for production of foods, wines, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you had your development on the hills, and a lot of it was to preserve because these areas flooded.
And let me take, now the people that want zero, they won't like this, okay? But the other side of the argument is if you take the 28 and say, okay, it makes sense to do 28. And if you look at a general plan, yes, these are going to be big homes. But if you looked at it and said part of the vision is to have an inventory of a wide variety of homes. Mm-hmm. We have an inventory, like my home, I wouldn't say is a home that's going to be attractive to somebody that's going to head up, a major employer. It might be attractive to a manager at a major employer, but it's not the type of home that somebody that is in the high mega net worth is going to say, let me buy that house. And you do need to have some
housing
of that.
Housing for the 1%.
No, well, housing for the top of the pyramid to some degree so that you can attract those kind of companies to provide jobs in your community. If you're going to do that, it's going to be in sites like that. So, you know, you don't want to exclude... Well, you don't want to exclude the 1%.
Sure, but are they
community.
Providing jobs to the community, or is that?
Well, in the case of, let's take Sorrent Technology.
Okay.
You know, so here was a gentleman that actually provided a great deal of wealth in this community. He came up with a patent that Cisco Systems bought out, you know, time frame about 2005. Yeah. And the number that hits me is something like $7.3 billion. He not only provided a lot of jobs, I don't remember his name, but he provided a lot of wealth.
I can't think of his
name. Because it got distributed through the employees. Let's take Tony McGee at Lagunitas.
Yeah. These are all great examples, but these aren't requirements for the project approval. So it's not, I mean, this isn't a foregone conclusion that that's what's going to happen with these houses. It's just because there's
no, that's
houses,
right.
It doesn't mean job providers
no,
are coming.
No, but inside the general plan, it says provide a robust and wide mix of housing.
But maybe we should be thinking about that when we...
So you need to provide something for the 1% because
we're
you
not
want your fair share.
We're not even providing housing for people to work in this community.
Right.
So we want to make sure that 28 rich people can buy a house.
Exactly.
But we can't afford to actually have the employees because they have to live in Sacramento to be able to commute to Petaluma.
I'm taking all sides of this argument. See, I'm saying that you absolutely have to do what you're talking about. That's a human need. But you don't want to exclude that 1% from your community either. You don't want to accommodate it totally.
That 1% has not been excluded
out in
our
the county,
community.
I'm sure they're there.
Go look at D Street and all the work and the people are putting in the houses. They're buying a house for $2 million, and they have to put $2 million into it because it's completely just rotted.
A frame. Or they'll knock down everything but the fireplace, so it's a remodel.
Well, so that it's a remodel, exactly. And we've seen that, too.
But back to climate change. We do have to take that into consideration when we're considering these developments outside the city core, because you also have the issues with fire, with the drought. You're going to have more rain as well. We have more extremes, and you have more runoff potential downstream. So, you know, all of these things need to be taken into account, and I look forward to seeing the EIR.
Well, you know, when we talk about, you know, it's interesting, you know, the dredging. So, it's, you know, it's very interesting talking about the dredging. If we don't dredge, we're going to flood. But with the flood control project, it always said if you continue to build more upstream development, that you're going to go ahead and have more flooding. Yeah. So we're kind of shifting one argument to another argument, and that's what seems to happen. Everybody forgets history, just like people have forgotten 6 million people were gassed or murdered in World War II.
Oh, that's a heck of a pivot. I hope people haven't forgotten that.
Well, you know what? People have, because it's been 70 years. And so people don't remember the flood control project or the intricacies of it, but... You and I remember that statement in there.
It's interesting because politics is fluid. It is always a changing situation. And you have politicians making arguments of convenience instead of conviction.
Of
and that's where you get into trouble.
That's right.
You know, or people that want to be somebody instead of do something.
Right.
People say, what's the best advice? The best advice I could give, not to somebody that wants to get into politics, because I'm not, you know, the best
run
advice
away.
To a voter.
Exactly.
Yeah, run away. The best advice to a voter is find somebody that wants to do something, not somebody that wants to be somebody.
Right.
And
that's
then find out
that's
if
exactly
that's something
right.
they want to do, you agree with.
Right.
Because just because somebody wants to do something, they might want to do something that you'll despise.
Well, you know what is disturbing? I've heard a couple times that the city council that if you don't stack the room, they're not going to listen to what you say. Even though the information is solid, you can see what's going on. And when I have to hear something like that, I'm thinking, well, that is not government working because they're looking to what a group says, even if the information isn't even solid. And then you give solid information. Well, it might not be popular. Well, politics shouldn't be about popularity.
Is that democracy, kind of?
No, that is not democracy. Yeah. When you bring in a bunch of people who are just sitting in a room. Just to
what
show
if,
we brought a bunch of people
what
in.
What if they're all informed people, though, that are all
if they're
expressing
in, if they're informed,
their opposition to
no, if they're informed and they have solid scientific evidence and understand what the documents actually say, that's fine. But giving your opinion of yes or no without information.
I mean, what are you advocating, that you don't allow people to come in, or that the council should ignore them?
No, well, I think the council has to make a real decision because they have the documents in front of them.
I would imagine they do.
Let me tell you, the most influential speaker. You're going to laugh at this at the end, but it's true.
Not Zen Destiny.
No.
Brian?
No.
Sorry.
There was the issue of raising the fees at the swimming pool because we were so looking for money. And there was the issue of, do we open the swimming pool later and do we, close it down earlier and all of this. And this is my first term as mayor, and you had the room packed with adults. And they were all vehement about, don't raise it by 50 cents and all of that.
We don't want another quarter. Even though it only costs a quarter, we don't pay 50 cents.
I just want to remind the listeners out there, you're listening to KPCA LP. This is in Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. We have, as our guest, the ex-mayor, who's still always a mayor, David Glass with us, as well as Janice Cater Thompson and myself. And this is Inside Petaluma, and let's continue with our
A 9-year-old, and I'm going to say her name here, because I'll never forget Annie Matthews. She steps up, and she's talking, and she's thinking the mayor has more authority than the mayor does. Mr. Mayor, please don't allow this to happen because, and she goes through all the reasons and how this will impact her life.
Yeah.
And it was something that was pretty well split on the council, because I think I did turn out to be like the deciding vote, because it was like 3-3.
What was the issue?
The issue was the swimming pool and the fees and the length that the pool would be opened, whether it would close early, in the year, all of that. I changed my mind, but I let everybody know. I want you to know the reason I'm changing my mind is what Annie Matthews said here today resonates with me on behalf of all the kids here in the community.
Yeah.
And if that's the cost for the city to operate this pool, then that's what we're going to have to do to provide that opportunity to Annie Matthews and the other kids.
So she wanted the fees raised?
No, she wanted the pool accessible, and she wanted the longer duration. I don't know that she was into money at the time. So you go, this is like probably 2003 or 4.
Yeah.
So now you go all these years later, and I'm walking precincts, and I see Annie Matthews on the voter list. And
awesome.
Here comes this young girl
door,
and I asked if she was that girl, and it turned out she was the sister. And she said that Annie never stopped talking about the fact that you said she was the one that changed your mind at the swimming pool. It was so public input sometimes, and there are other times where I thought I was going to do something and did something completely different. Yeah. There were other times where I didn't know what to do. The best lecture I got after public input was at the Planning Commission. I was new on the Planning Commission, and Gary Broad was a longtime Planning Commissioner.
Yeah.
And after the meeting, he explained to me the fallacy of my logic and how I was evaluating something, and had a profound effect because I realized I had made a mistake.
Right.
I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
But he explained to me the ramifications of if you follow that path and take it out to its logical extension down the road, what you're doing is not right because the decision you're making, you're thinking that, this person is responsible.
Right.
The decision runs with the land. Oh. And, of course, you know that, but you don't think in that perspective.
Right.
Maybe you're internalizing it to the people that are in front of you instead of projecting what happens 2, 3, 4, 5 property owners out.
Right.
And so you learn a little all the time, and you make mistakes because you didn't know better.
Yeah.
But try to make a different mistake. Don't make the same mistake over and over again.
Speaking of mistakes, I remember there was the Lynch Creek project. I remember the Deer Creek project. It originally, some of us were advocating more of a mixed-use scenario with less retail.
And there was actually a design that was built by Lois Fisher, which was very mixed-use and a really beautiful project.
Yeah, I think I remember you and some of us were saying that there was a concern if you have too much retail space, it might not go to use. And lo and behold, that seems to happen, where there's now an effort to add some housing there. What are your thoughts on this project?
Well, I mean, I remember that vividly.
Yeah.
The fiscal economic impact analysis. that was done, it showed that we were getting an overbuilt retail environment. Yeah. And so what you were getting was not an impact to the city. You were getting a parcel analysis that conceivably, if everything worked perfectly on this one parcel, you could generate all of this revenue on the one parcel.
Right.
But you were going to be cannibalizing other retail opportunities in your town. It's somewhat ironic that they went forward with it, and it turned out the retail site that was not populated was their own, rather than cannibalizing other businesses. So, but I, you know, we tried. We tried to get them to come in with a mixed-use project that included housing. One of the alternatives that we tried to pursue there was to have a
skilled nursing center.
Skilled nursing facility. That was actually identified as an environmentally superior alternative.
I know.
With less traffic impact. It would have consumed the property. They would have made a lot more money than they made. But for whatever reason, maybe they didn't like the messenger, whether it was me or you or other people in the environmental community. I don't know.
It was very strange.
Let's just cut through the chase. It was because of backdoor dealings, and the council, some council members were making deals with the developer, working hand-in-hand with this guy. This is what we were going to do. We're going to deliver it for you, and it was delivered. And that's the way, that's why we're in such peril with traffic in this town, because we have a council member who has been delivering all these projects. Riverfront is a perfect example of a project that is going to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in this area without access in and out that is safe.
You know,
so, you know, I, you know, David, I really always appreciate you always being very soft on things, because sometimes you're not. But the bottom line is, we have to call a spade a spade.
Well, the interesting thing is that whether it was Deer Creek or other projects, they come in with this tremendous push behind them of how they're going to provide local jobs.
Right.
But they didn't hire local contractors. They brought in out-of-town contractors.
They brought in out-of-town contractors, absolutely.
And so that was an irony, because I think that, you know, certainly the illusion was different on the part of the contractors who did not get the work then. And it seems like, if memory serves, and maybe it doesn't, but if memory serves, it seems like there was some disillusionment on the part of some local people that didn't get jobs out of
the deal. Well, the bottom line is, we have a project that they're now retrofitting housing, you know, which I'm hoping, you know, the retail space is open. But what are they going to open with? It's certainly not going to be retail. I mean, the bottom line is, when I go shopping, I leave Petaluma because there is not shopping in this town.
What?
When people say to shop local, I don't buy my clothes at Target. I don't always go downtown because I don't want to spend $100 on a top. That's really a schmata that's going to, you know, you're going to wash once and it's still going to...
A what?
A schmata. A rag.
Oh, okay.
A rag.
I didn't know what that was.
A rag.
Brush up on my...
You know, in your Yiddish. You know, and it's just, you know, I mean, I really think that we need to really look at how this community... I mean, is it going to be taxes that keeps us going in this community? And the bottom line is, if it's more and more taxes, you're going to have a lot more people that just are going to be saying no.
There is going to be a need for more taxes, or there's going to be a dramatic change in the services that are provided. I think that's pretty obvious that that's what's in the cards.
Which, it's
money already spent. You know, you can see it because the bleeding is already there.
Well, what I'd like to see is that the city council... Well, I guess, Jason, I'm hearing some music.
It's just slowly starting.
It's slowly, the countdown.
Happy trails to you!
All right. Okay, well, this has been great having you on.
Thank you. It was great to be with
David Glass.
Thank you,
David. Thank you so much.
Jason, thank you. Did a great job.
And, doing my best with the board here. But,
you're doing great.
You've been listening to Inside Petaluma on KPCA-LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. You can go to InsidePetaluma.com to listen to all of our archive shows along with this one. And we look forward to seeing you, or having you listen to us, that is, next week. Thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.
I'd find someone to love, someone to help me say.
Bye.